Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time.
And we talk about love on this Valentine's Day. I'm so happy we're reunited with a guest who was with us last 2 years ago. Christopher Phillips is one remarkable person who's done this extraordinary thing with his life. And that is he's gone all over the world to talk with people about what life means and what love is. And his latest book is Socrates in Love, Philosophy for a Passionate Heart. Christopher looks in this book at the five original forms of love, as he says, cultivated by the Greeks of old. Family love, love of strangers, romantic love, and the love which encompasses everything from love of friends to love of country and unconditional love. He has set up Socrates cafes all over the world. He has met with people in maximum security prisons in Cuba, in Northern Ireland, on Capitol Hill in Washington with elementary school students, at Reverend Billy Graham's final revival with Christians, Muslims, and Sikhs in New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. He's doing good things with his life. And we also have to say that he and his wife are the ecstatic parents of a baby girl who was born exactly 10 years to the day that he and his wife met, of course, at a Socrates cafe. Oh, we're going to have a good hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 227-2050. Happy Valentine's Day, Christopher.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, how great to have you on the air. And you're a dad now. You have a baby.
I am, and I miss her so much.
Oh, no. Where are you? Where is she?
I am in caught in freezing rain and New York City, and she and my wife are in Sonston, Tampa, Florida, with my dad, who's enjoying their company immensely.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, let's start with, you know, parent love. Let's start with that, and you have some real interesting things to say about in your chapter about parent love, because sometimes our children don't turn out to be who we think they're going to be, but this love, and you describe this when you discovered, you know, that you were going to have a baby, and there's this ecstasy about all of it.
There is great ecstasy, great anxiety.
Yes, yes.
As well, I know that I have many friends, surprisingly many, who decided not to have children, and one of the reasons they said was, well, you know, you just never know what you're going to get. You can be the most perfect parent on this planet, and still something can go wrong. And I was thinking, well, thank heavens my parents took that leap into the unknown and decided to bring me into the world, because I, you know, it is fraught with peril and insecurity and everything.
Right.
But it's I'm just so glad to be here and to be able to do something with my life. And I held a dialogue in an excerpt of Dallas, Texas on the question, what is parent love? And it was really interesting because they talked about the fact that some parents, that pure parent love is being there for your child and having faith in your child even when things go horrifically wrong, and even when your child goes down a path that is unimaginably bad. They talked about Timothy McVeigh's parents, about Eric Rudolph's parents, how they pleaded for their children's lives, even though they recognized the heinous deeds, the monstrosity of the deeds that they did. But as parents, they couldn't lose faith altogether in their children. That so the people at this dialogue said, you know, I think like no other parents on this planet, they've been tested. Also the parents of John Walker Lynn, the so-called American Taliban, whose parents, by all indications, were very nurturing. They raised a child who was encouraged to search, again, was probably duped or led astray, but had good intentions. And again, they And as a result, this young man may well spend his life behind bars. Mm-hmm. But their parent love is such that they would never even consider abandoning their child in time of most dire need. Mm. And the point of the parents in Texas was, look, there's parents who basically disown their kids for committing much less serious, quote-unquote, offenses, from just marrying the person, a person they don't approve of, to being gay, mm-hmm. to taking a career pursuit that they don't approve of. There are legions of parents who have virtually nothing to do with their kids as a result. And yet, here are parents whose kids have gone hideously wrong, and yet they still are there for them at a time when everyone else has forsaken them. And there's a message there, I think, yeah. of what parent love is all about.
I remember doing an interview with Christopher, and there are very few times that, because you've got to keep talking when you do a radio show, that I was just reduced to tears. But, and I can't remember his name right now. It was some years ago, that, and you probably know who he is, the gentleman who lost...
There is an ongoing Socrates Cafe group that meets in Mandalay Bay Resort Casino.
No kidding.
You know, it's
no.
been meeting for years. I mean, right there, you know, people within arm's reach of slot machines and everything. it's one of the most thriving groups. They're, and, you know, it. They open my eyes. They open my lenses to different ways of looking at Las Vegas. For some people, you know, it is all about the desperate housewives coming there and getting away just for long enough so that when they return to suburbia, it's tolerable. But for others, there was one woman who took part in the dialogue who crossed the Sonora Desert with her young children. She'd been working in a maquiladora, really a sweatshop in Mexico, earning $15 a week. Now she makes a good living because of Vegas. To her, it represents higher passions because she's able to give her kids the type of good life and safe home that they otherwise could never have. And they now can pursue their own higher aspirations. So it depends on who you talk to. A young man from New England who's been so pegged and stereotyped and was not able to break out of it in small-town New England came to Las Vegas, was able to transform himself because no one knew who he was. So he was able to experiment with himself and evolve as a person because he was allowed to. So... would I still want to live in Las Vegas? No. But there are those who find it the promised land in so many ways. There are those who lose their shirts, who lose relationships as a result of risking it all in the wrong way there. But it's fascinating how this same place can represent so many types of passions, from the very high and sublime to the very base in the same city. It's sort of a vortex for all of these things.
Christopher Phillips is our guest. His latest book is Socrates in Love, Philosophy for the Passionate Heart. He looks at five original forms of love in this book, as cultivated by, as he says, the Greeks of old: family love, love of strangers, romantic love, love which encompasses everything from love of friends to love of country, and unconditional love. And he has these wonderful conversations with people all over the world on all of the issues that matter, the questions that matter. What is life? What is love? What is unconditional love? What is love of child? So we welcome your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Christopher Phillips is our guest this hour. His book is Socrates in Love. We're celebrating Valentine's Day by talking about the various kinds of love. And welcome to your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 227-2050, 227-2050. And we start with Verdell from Milwaukee. Hi, Verdell.
Hi. Today is my husband and my 65th wedding anniversary.
Oh, you're kidding, Verdell. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Wow.
And and we still care. We're lucky we have each other yet at that age. We're 88, you know.
Yeah.
But we have shared our love throughout the world. We have taken into our lives the young people from all over the world that call us mom and dad. In fact, one of them called this week and one called last week. One's in Canada and the other one is here, but is going back to Sierra Leone. And you learn about cultures, and you learn love is the most important thing in the world. If we had love, we wouldn't be shooting at each other. You know, when you love somebody, that I don't say we all make mistakes. I do, too. And I get angry once in a while. That's a normal procedure. But to apologize or say I'm sorry or you know, just bring that out, that love is still there. And I'm glad that Jim and I have had a long life together and we've gone through a lot of hurdles, but we have enjoyed, like I say, learning about other cultures. I mean, from South America, from Mexico, from India. My India son painted on our 27th anniversary. He painted the Taj Mahal on a black velvet. We had an antique frame, and he said, Mom, why don't I paint something on there for you and Dad? And so he painted the Taj Mahal. And
oh, great.
Hanging in my dining room on one wall. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Verdell. 65 years. How about that, Christopher?
I hope I get to meet her and her husband someday.
Yeah.
That's just beautiful. And it just shows that romantic love begins with a couple, but it doesn't end there. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they have manifested their love by sort of trying to throw their arms around the world in some wonderful ways, and it in turn has bounced back and enhanced and enriched their own relationship so much. And I think that's true, that when if you ask what is love, you have to pursue all forms of love if you're going to make each of them all they can be.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Verdell. Happy anniversary to you. It's that's quite a day. Quite a day for them, huh? Well, think about that today. What about this? I'm wondering if it's hard, if you have to concentrate or you're best at one kind of love. And I'm thinking about stories that we hear about some world leaders, you know, including people like Gandhi, including people like Dr. Martin Luther King, who had this incredible love of friends, of country, of unconditional love. But when it came to maybe a parental love or being with one person kind of love, they just couldn't do it. Can you serve both kinds of love, is what I'm saying?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, you can get so wrapped up in the so-called unconditional love. Of reaching out to others and sort of that adulation that comes with it if you're a Gandhi or a Martin Luther King. I remember Gandhi talked about or wrote about the fact that when they started the first ashram, that his wife didn't want to be part of this group, that everybody had to take turns cleaning the latrine.
Right. That was I remember that in the film, yeah.
And he was so worried about his public image.
Mm-hmm.
What would others think?
Mm-hmm.
His wife said, well, what about me?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what about the commitment we made to each other? Talking about him literally and figuratively, they were at a threshold. He was at a threshold, and he was getting ready to kick her out the door. And he stopped himself just in time, and he said to her in perplexity, not just who have I become, but what have I become?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, he had enough honesty that he was able to catch himself, at least at that juncture, just in time. So again, it's you know, you have to try to strike a balance. If you lose sight of those forms of romantic love or of love in a relationship, familial love, because you're so caught up in... I mean, how many people are so much more giving to a high school principal as a great high school principal to his students, but he's a horrible father? Or that's a terrible example. I'm going to get all these calls from high school principals now. But just an example of somebody who gives and gives and gives to others outside one's
right.
family or immediate relationship, but is not so loving or caring for those who supposedly should matter the most.
Mm-hmm.
if you give of yourself to others, it should be hopefully in a way that enhances those love strings with those who are right there beside you every step of the way, I would think.
Yeah. Let's talk about the highest form of love, agape. The Greeks, at least, considered it the highest form of love. And you ask the question, who shows unconditional love, and get some wonderful answers to that. My answer, of course, is dogs. I'm into dogs these days, and, you know, that's one of the reasons.
Uh-huh.
That's it. It's because of the unconditional love you get all the time from your dog.
Oh, yeah. That was actually the a response to a dialogue I held on unconditional love in the maximum security prison. And this one inmate said, you know, my dog is the only one who never judged me or never kicked me further when I was down. And yet he said, you know, there were times when I was down when I essentially kicked my dog. And yet after a few seconds of hurt, that dog would turn around and love me just as much as ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, I mean, the revelations there were so touching. I was on the one hand awestruck, and on the other hand just moved to tears just about with every offering from them. Another one talked about, well, you know, my mother does love me with strings attached, but they're love strings. And no matter how far astray I go, she is still there for me, and she still believes in me so much.
Mm.
And, you know, he says, I've done some horrendous things, and yet she's got this unquenchable faith in me, and somehow, some way, I'm going to live up to that faith at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's, gosh, you know, it's just amazing. They spoke so honestly and eloquently, and it just is such an unending education for me, because I'm able, of course, to walk out of that place, but with them expanding and opening my horizons in such profound ways.
Mm-hmm. And what did Socrates have to say? We talk about this being the highest form of love. How do we achieve it, and why was it the highest form of love?
Well, I think that it's typically considered then and now the highest form of love because it is that in which you are literally risking it all in order to leave. You spend your mortal moment in such a way that you leave it better off than it was before. You know, Socrates, at the last parts of his days, lived in a time where the democracy had gone in great decline, where people were afraid to speak up and speak out, and he felt it was more incumbent to do so than ever. And he believed that if sacrificing my life or if being put to death is that way to best ensure that democracies to come can have a stand a chance of perpetuating themselves, then this is what I should do, and I should do so without any acrimony. What an incredible view. I don't know how many people would do that, especially, mm-hmm. you know, he was a husband, father, and yet he felt it was that important that he would sacrifice his life. Of course, he was you know, pretty much in his later years, but nonetheless, he left behind so many who loved him so dearly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of my favorite philosophers is Simone Weil, and she talks about, she was a very unorthodox Catholic, and she came from a very well-to-do background, and yet she cast her lot completely with the downtrodden. Sacrificing her health at a very young age as a result. But she so firmly believed in this concept of unconditional love, and that what one should do in one's mortal moment is give it all, sacrifice everything to make sure that all humans are treated humanely and equally. And she believed that love is filling a void. She believed that we shouldn't want or expect to come into a world of pure love, because otherwise, what would a human do with his existence? So she believed that love is, that the absence of love is where a human's task begins, and that it's up to us, whenever we see that void of love, to fill it. And so she devoted her life to filling love in times of absolutely unbridled hatred, and as a result, she's looked to today as one of those paradigmatic figures that we should follow if we want to make ours a more heart-shaped world.
Oh, that's interesting. So how do you fill that void? How do you put love where there is no love?
You know, you look at, most people tend to look far afield, but I think we should look in our own backyards. Wherever we see needy people,
mm-hmm.
wherever we see people who are feeling very disenfranchised, wherever we see people who really need somebody to listen to their story, I think we should be there for them. It's so easy to sort of say, I want to save the world and forget about your own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many people crying out for attentiveness. And I think we should be more cognizant of that. As we walk down the street and as we ask people, how are you, asking them and really wanting to know. I think that's how we start.
That's certainly how you live your life all over the world, doing just that. How are you?
I was raised by a mom who was an attentive listener, and I think that really imprinted on me. I don't think I'm naturally gifted at anything except maybe listening, and I think that it has enriched my life immeasurably as a result.
I love the story. I'm glad you talked about filling the void and putting love there where it may not be, because you start the book with this guy I'd love to meet, Alexandros. And man, oh man, did he ever do that, didn't he?
He was magic. He reminds me so much of Zorba, Zorba the Greek. You know, just loving him is just such a part of his bones, his sinew. I mean, he's just love personified.
And,
you know, he's one of these people who could probably go to a misanthropes convention and have them all leaving, loving one another. I truly, you know, he's just one of those people who can suddenly transform a situation, whether it's, as I write about in my book, two women screaming at each other, one pro-abortion, one anti-abortion, just screaming without listening. And he could step in a situation like that and soon have them laughing. Just you know, and love at its best is that transformative. But some, you know, he took a risk. He put himself in between. He could have gotten his lights punched out. But that's what we all need to do in our own way.
Right. Let's welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. On this Valentine's Day, we're talking with Christopher Phillips, whose latest book is Socrates in Love, Philosophy for a Passionate Heart. He is also the author of Socrates Cafe and Six Questions of Socrates. He has gone all over the world asking the important questions about life. And this particular book, he's been to New Orleans, and he's been to Japan, and he's been to South Africa and Northern Ireland. He talks about to maximum security prisons and looking at the various forms of love and what they mean. And so we thought it was appropriate for Valentine's Day. Let's go to Ron from Madison, our next caller, Christopher. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. If Franz Jagerstatter isn't in your current book, I hope he'll be in a future book concerning agape. In case you're not familiar with him, he was an Austrian who opposed Hitler's wars. And he had a wife and three daughters, and he was a dairy farmer, and he refused to be drafted into the Nazi military.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because the government was still taking taxes from his earnings, income, whatever, he reduced the size of his dairy herd so that he would be below the minimum amount, so he didn't have to pay any war taxes for Hitler's war machine. But the Nazis got their comeuppance. They, on August 6th, 1942, I believe it was, they chop his head off with the French the French instrument, the guillotine. That was the way they did it. But I, you know, see him as a sort of a patron saint for nonviolent resistors to the wars of evil empires. And I hope that you already know about him, but if not, please study up on him and spread the word, because he is perhaps one of the 20th century's best examples of agape.
And you know, it's, I have to pick and choose from an embarrassment of paradigmatic examples, but that is certainly one of the best.
It sure is. Yeah, thanks for spreading that story this Valentine's Day. Karen from Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I want to tell you just a very quick little story about some children who I thought showed tremendous love for people that they did not know. I was teaching in a little elementary school just south of Menominee. We had 120 children in that school, and a number of the families who sent children there were on the economic edge, I would say. In November, after Thanksgiving, the children and the teachers decided that they would, instead of exchanging names and giving each other Christmas gifts or bringing gifts for the teacher, they would try to raise enough money to buy a goat through Heifer Project International. A goat cost $120, and they thought they could send the money for some children who needed a goat to help their family survive. And they decided they would encourage each child to earn a dollar. And if each child brought a dollar, they would be able to purchase this goat. So the fifth graders, who were the oldest ones in the school, traced almost a life-size figure of a goat on big paper, and they covered it with Post-it notes, 120 Post-it notes. And when you brought in a dollar, you got to take off one of the Post-it notes. And as we started to see the goat taking shape, then we would know we were getting closer to our goal. Well, the children reached the goal very quickly, and they decided that they would try to buy another goat. By the time Christmas came, they had bought seven goats.
Oh, my.
Teachers started to say, oh, well, we'll offer a matching grant. One teacher told her sister out of town about what the children were doing. She sent some money, and it became contagious.
Uh-huh.
And so they were so successful that year that the next year they said, let's get a water buffalo this year. I think we can learn so much from children. I've been a teacher a long time, and I don't think in a sentimental way about children. We had our share of altercations on the playground and so forth, but it was wonderful.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call. Christopher.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I remember having a dialogue with a group of teachers, and one of them said after the Hurricane Katrina tragedy that she instructed her children to collect, canned goods to send to them without soliciting their ideas. And one of the children said, well, I'll do that, but I want to write them letters, and I want to let them know that somebody is thinking about them and wishing them all the best and loves them. And, sort of out of the mouths of babes, children come up with these brilliant ideas of how to create greater connectedness among people who must feel so forsaken. And she's so right that and it's so important to listen to children and let ourselves learn from them.
You know, that was there was such an outpouring. In addition to the horror of that particular event, I can remember getting calls from truck drivers who were on their way to New Orleans to bring food, people who just hopped in their cars to go down to help. There was so much of that kind of, and I put it in some category of love, but there was a lot of that going on in this country, and it just restored your faith in us, didn't it?
It did. I went down, I held a dialogue in Mardi Gras, season before the hurricane, and then I used to live nearby, and then I went there a few months afterward and held another dialogue at the Café du Monde. And again, people talked about all of these unsung heroes, people without a roof over their head who nonetheless had skills that they could contribute, whether it was dispensing medicine or first aid or just listening to others' woes. And to me, that is truly heroic.
Mm-hmm. And you have this lovely chapter in your book about stranger love, where people, you hear stories about during the Depression that people would just leave, a place at the table for somebody who might need a meal or there is some of that. You've met some of those people and talk about them in your book as well, that they just open their homes to people they don't know.
It's true. I mean, I held a dialogue on the Mexico-Arizona border with a family that you might think is opposed to building a wall. I mean, that you would think is in favor of it, but in fact is opposed. And in fact, they have a tradition that's been going back for generations that they always have an extra plate at the table just in case a stranger in need knocks on the door and is in need of a hot meal and some good company. Or there was a family in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, who took in a family, of refugees from Hurricane Katrina. It was a really trying situation for all of them, but at the same time, they were, in a certain sense, grateful this tragedy gave them an opportunity to reach out.
Yeah.
And both of them have learned so much. But again, that notion of stranger love, that one day you may need a stranger to give you succor at a time of dire need. And so it behooves us to act in the world in ways so we're reaching out when we have that opportunity, because we may be the needy one the next time around.
Yeah.
Thank you for supporting
Zorba.
This program.
I see that film.
With your
you
financial
Zorba. Zorba. That's one of my favorite all-time films. I love
Anthony
that film.
Quinn,
Anthony Quinn. Oh, man. Talk about Talk about all kinds of love in that film. That's a good one to watch on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Valentine's
Day,
you know, I truly did meet my wife, Cecilia. I met her on August 18th, 1996 at a Socrates Cafe. And, you know, there's a lot of Socrates Cafe groups in Wisconsin. So people who are looking to meet friends or the love of their life, as in my case, should consider going to one. It's really largely, Kathleen, thanks to you that so many people have heard about it and spread the word. But if they ever want to come to our website at philosopher.org, I can fill them in on where there's groups now throughout the state.
Wonderful. Philosopher.org. Okay, great. Yeah, go meet the love of your life. It could happen to you. And here you are this many years later, and you have a baby, and yeah, it's just good. All right, we got to pause for a moment. We'll return and welcome more phone calls for Christopher as well. Christopher Phillips, the book is Socrates in Love, Philosophies for a Passionate Heart. If you want to go to the website, I know some people who have gone to these Socrates cafes and found them terrific. So it's philosopher.org, and he'll let you know what's happening in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with the author of Socrates in Love this hour of the program. Christopher Phillips is with us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 227-2050. Kay from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I appreciated your comments about Simone Weil because she is a big heroine of mine. And but I was surprised that you called her a Catholic because her book of Letters to Father Perrin explains over and over why she would not be baptized a Catholic, that she wanted to stand at the door of the church so that she could embrace both those within and without. She felt that she was so influenced by movements of people that she once said if a group of Nazis stood outside her window and sang a song, she might want to join them. And that she feared being in the Catholic Church at a time when it was very parochial would perhaps blind her to some of the things that saints greater than she had been blinded to, such as the Inquisition.
Yes, you're right. I made a mistake, actually. Christian who was never at home with institutionalized Christianity.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for clearing that up.
Thank you. And like I think a lot of people are going to be learning more about her after this show.
I hope so.
Yeah. Kathleen is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning. I'm loving your conversation as I've been traveling. I would recommend to Christopher, who is a professional listener, and I am in a profession that does a lot of that also, but he might truly enjoy the book called The Sacred Art of Listening.
Who's it by?
I cannot recall, but it has the most intriguing illustrations. How does one depict listening?
I won't
give it away, but I'm sure you'll find it.
Okay. I think it's very interesting that if you scour college offerings, course offerings, you will see classes in rhetoric and debate. But I don't think there is one dedicated class, not one dedicated class per semester that's just on the art and science of listening.
Yes.
And yet I dare say that's what the world needs more of now.
Yes. I serve as a chaplain, and it is about healing. Healing lives by listening to the pain of the stories and being a witness to people's suffering. I did want to share a bit of love that's gone along the lineage with my husband's family. His mother, Arlene, was a wonderfully open woman who ended up as a widow with five young children. And yet, being alone in a farmhouse on a big highway, the hobos frequented their door, and she always came and welcomed them in and fed them. She has a daughter now who recently told us what's happening in her life in southwestern or southeastern Wisconsin, and I don't want to give away any privacy, but she and her friend, discovered that there was a homeless man that she kept seeing in the neighborhood. And the weather was getting cold about 3 weeks back, and there was concern about how in the world was he going to deal with this sub-zero weather. Mm-hmm. She came to discover he was living in a culvert. And he works doing landscaping in the summer, but times have troubled his life and troubled his family and estranged people from his life in a variety of ways. And I said, well, why isn't he in a homeless shelter? And they said, because he has a dog.
Oh.
No one will take him because of his dog.
Oh.
And so he's in his 50s probably. And these two women decided, we should be able to figure out something. And they offered to have him come and stay in their garage.
Oh, my.
He was hesitant about it.
Oh.
And he told them later, he said, I'm not a person that pushes my religion. And he pulled a little Bible out of his pocket, and he said, when that invitation was offered to me, I didn't know if I should take it, but I thought about it. And later, my prayer was, I hope that the lady would be okay with it.
Hmm.
I wanted her to be okay. They set up a tent in the garage, he and his dog in a microwave. And the days, a couple of days went on in the cold weather, and they still started brainstorming a little further.
Sure.
And they recalled that not far from them was a house that's abandoned. The owner, 94, went into a nursing home, and the family lives far away. So it's, you know, an older home that'll eventually be torn down, probably. But they went and made some telephone calls, and guess what? The homeless man is now the caretaker of the house.
Oh, my.
To clean it up for
yeah.
them, because they're far away.
Mm.
And they have to maintain the heat and, mm. You know, the things that are still the mothers
mm-hmm,
in there.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has opened up a new trust, a new awareness. And it makes us all begin to wonder in our families how many other situations could be
mm-hmm.
helped with a win-win
mm-hmm.
arrangement.
That's a wonderful story, isn't it, Christopher?
Story. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is.
Love stories. That's
yeah.
what it's all about today.
Right, love stories. There's your next book, Christopher.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think so. I think
you've
know,
got so many of them. Just
I think
love
every
stories.
Time people just connect like this. It's just a love in, so to speak, without getting too gushy. But
no, I know. What you, I know. I've got
yeah.
a strong streak of sentimentality
yeah.
in me too. It, tears are falling during that story. Thanks, Kathleen. Just quickly, Marty from Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
Nicely with the last story. We really try to pay attention when we're in small cafes. Who else is eating in the cafe with you? I was in Kansas, traveling across Kansas, was in a small town in a little cafe. This obviously homeless guy came in, ordered a cup of coffee, and as I left, I offered to pay for it to the cashier, and she said, well, someone already has. So I left a couple bucks to buy him some soup or something, and you've got to be careful to not feel very full of yourself after doing something kind like that, because
right.
as I was traveling out of town, I got pulled over by the state patrol and was given a citation for speeding. But pay attention when you're eating in small towns, in small cafes, or even in big cities. Who else is in there with you?
Yeah.
Very often there's going to be someone there who you can tell is probably down on their luck, and it doesn't
mm-hmm.
take but a couple bucks when you're paying your check to pay for them as well.
Yeah, that's a great story, too. Pay attention. Alexandros did that. He was a restaurant guy, the guy we were talking about earlier, right? He did that in every restaurant, every place.
He did, and I think that's why for – people like me who were away from home, it was such a home away from home because he just took us under his wing. He didn't care about making money at all. He just loved for people to feel like his restaurant was their sort of home away from home. And it made all the difference in my life at a time when I was so unsure of myself. And I'm just trying to sort of find my way and figure out who I should strive to be in this world.
Yeah. Oh, happy Valentine's Day. Thanks for all the love stories, Christopher.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
It's always a pleasure to be on your program.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. The book, his latest, is Socrates in Love, Philosophy for a Passionate Heart. And he also gave you that place to go here to find out more about Socrates Cafes in the, where did I write it down? Here it is, in the state of Wisconsin. It's just philosopher.org. His book has just been published by Norton, and you'll find it terrific, I'm sure, those of you who have called in. Thanks for listening. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for all of her production help. Mimi Notstein, our on-air producer here in Milwaukee. Thanks. Thanks, everybody. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved.